This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Time to put on the show.
I want to be very upfront with everyone this morning. It's everyone listening, anybody who might be texting into 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line, anybody I might come into contact with. I am not accepting complaints about a primetime victory in which Seattle never trailed. Let's just get it out in the open. I don't want to hear your opinions about the wide receiver sweep that was called on fourth down in the first quarter. I don't want to hear about any of your thoughts about how Seattle's lack of killer instinct. The Seahawks never trailed. And you don't get points for aesthetic beauty when it comes to victory. They won on the road in the NFL in the final day of November and are alone in first place in the NFC West. And I will be entertaining no complaints, Paul.
I am the prime suspect typically when it comes to complaints. And
Don't do it.
I'll bend the knee to your request. At least for now, there will probably be moments over the course of the broadcast where I will express annoyance with certain things, but they'll probably more have to do with how terrible a quarterback Carson Wentz was, or that Brian Griese spent most of the game, it seems like, trying to make excuses for him. I'm going to stick to the Seahawks because you are right, Danny. You win your clunkers, and the Seahawks won a clunker, and yes, it was a clunker.
It was, but there were moments of transcendent beauty. There were moments in which Seattle's statuesque 6'4" wide receiver was matched up against one of the better cover corners in the league. There were moments.
Why do these idiot cornerbacks keep trying to fight DK Metcalf? What are they thinking?
Would you rather try to cover him?
I would just keep my distance. I am definitely not, and I understand, cornerbacks largely, especially once they get paid, aren't about that life.
They
God
are.
Forbid
Slay,
someone blocked
Slay's
them.
Combative. Slay's combative. He was getting punked and he tried to stand up to him.
Look, he was getting blocked. I mean, this is football. You're upset about getting blocked.
It was a physical block. He'd given up two straight slants, right? In which it was basically like, if you're not going to be up on me, I'm going to absolutely just run a quick slant and I'm going to pick up yardage here. And you said that cornerbacks best keep their distance. I'm not sure if that's the best policy when it comes to DK Metcalf, because when you keep your distance, something like this might happen. Something
down,
like this.
13, here comes a blitz this time. Russ looks. Now he's going to let it fly. Got a man out there. Metcalf makes the catch at the 5. He's down at the 1 yard line. The Seahawks needed to open things up, and they did. Russell saw single coverage, and nobody throws the deep ball like Russell Wilson all the way down inside the 5, a 52-yard reception. DK Metcalf, welcome back to Philly.
Hang on, though. Isn't that why you keep your distance? I mean,
no, he just runs right by you.
Give
he
up
just
the slants.
He runs right by you. He absolutely torched him, and he specifically singled out Darius Slay, and look, This has become team strategy, right? Put your top corner on DK Metcalf and try to use the rest of your secondary to and have that guy, whether it's Stephon Gilmore, whether it's Patrick Peterson, whether it's Jalen Ramsey, and now Darius Slay, you single your best guy up on him, and you hope that he is able to somehow slow down DK Metcalf.
Jalen Ramsey's the only guy who did it successfully this year, and I feel like that is a nice feather in the cap for Jalen Ramsey, but everybody else has looked woefully inadequate. Danny, the Eagles are paying Darius Slay a lot of money for that performance that they got. And that was a performance where Darius Slay looked like just another cornerback.
He did. And that's a testament to DK Metcalf. So if we're looking at things that you can't complain about, you cannot complain about DK Metcalf, who right now leads the league in receiving yards. I never thought I'd say that about a Pete Carroll team, that they had a receiver that leads the league in receiving yards. Tyreek Hill and his 200 yards receiving in the first quarter, all fine and dandy. DK Metcalf leads the league in receiving yards.
I'll give you another, then, fantastic performance from last night. Jamal Adams was awesome. 9 tackles. It felt like way more. He was always around the ball. He was extremely chirpy. There was a play, I want to say, on the left sideline where he comes. It's a 5-yard gain on a screen. And he gets up over the running back after he sticks him. And you could hear that stick in that empty stadium. and he says, "You like that dog?" That moment made me cackle with glee. He was so good in this game. Whatever shoulder injury he might have been dealing with over the last couple of games, it did not seem to be an issue. And we've been waiting, I think, for a moment where he actually makes a difference at the second level. Of course, he took some issue with that last week when asked about his coverage. He almost had an interception on the play. Now, part of that had to do with Carson Wentz just throwing it right to him. But I was really impressed by this performance by Jamal Adams. This is why you traded 2 first-round picks for him. We got a performance like that in his first performance against the in his first game against the Atlanta Falcons. It was nice to see another performance like that. And he's going to have to keep playing, I think, like this if the Seahawks defense wants to continue to string along these successful performances. Because now we're talking about back-to-back performances where this defense has been good. They've been good.
Yes, they have. And we could talk about the caliber of competition, but that gets dangerously close to complaining or equivocating.
It does.
The defense played well. And Jamal Adams had an impact. He had a couple of big hits. He had a great sack on a blitz where he started chasing Carson Wentz down and ends up pulling him down. And he was feisty. He was feisty during the game. He was feisty after the game when he talked to reporter Joe Fan of NBC Sports Northwest. And Joe had asked him last week about his coverage ability and Jamal Adams wanted to do a follow-up report on how he looked in coverage.
Mr. Joe, you don't have anything to say? Mr. Joe, how was my coverage?
Man, well, I don't know why you're salty. I just asked, how do you feel?
Oh, man, you know, I mean, you said I got a little salty, man. I don't get salty, brother. Trust me. It takes a lot for me to really get salty, so I just wanted to ask you how my coverage was today.
Oh, I was going to ask you by the time.
Oh, okay.
More man coverage. You said on Friday that you were hoping that, or you were excited for things to change in the game coming up. I didn't get a chance to ask a follow up. Do you feel like you were in man coverage more in this game?
Absolutely. But how did I do? I'm asking you.
I thought you looked okay.
Damn. That makes my day. I'm going to have a hell of a flight, man.
My man.
I appreciate you, brother. No, it's all love, man. I appreciate y'all.
Not salty, a little petty. But I love it. I loved every single second of that. You know what? If you're using whatever you can to fuel yourself, do it. Go ahead and do it, whether you're DK Metcalf or you're Jamal Adams. And those two shined brightly last night. And it's great to see that this team is not just Russell Wilson when it comes to the star power. They have other guys that can take over an entire side of the ball, which is important for Jamal Adams. Considering it's not the same Bobby Wagner anymore. He still made some good plays last night. That play and coverage that he had downfield was awesome. But there's a bit of a changing of the guard, I would imagine, that will be going on with the Seahawks defense in the next couple of seasons. Jamal Adams is the centerpiece of that, and he was so good last night.
Jordan Brooks, too. Jordan Brooks continues to make plays. Now, he got called for a pass interference late that was part of, I don't know, may or may not have been a coordinated campaign by the Stripes to make that game interesting late with a number of specious penalties that were flagged. And, look, overall, the reaction that I heard from a lot of people is Seattle's not going to win a Super Bowl with a performance like that. And my response was, well, they didn't have to win a Super Bowl yesterday. They had to beat the Philadelphia Eagles, and they did more than enough to do that. It wasn't the prettiest game. And there are a lot of flaws that you can pick at and things that you can point to that they could have done better or were puzzling how it happened or why they didn't. That was a Philadelphia Eagles team that was poised to be knocked out in the first round. They didn't gain a first down in their first 5 possessions, and Seattle didn't do it. They didn't fully knock them out. But you know what? They also had control of that game for the most part. And any flaws that you find in that are being magnified in a game that they never had to come from behind.
Nail on the head right there. It was a clunker, but was it ever in doubt? Did you ever really feel like Philadelphia was going to challenge you in this game? Now, part of that is a reflection of just who Philadelphia is, especially offensively. But after those first 2 3-and-outs that the Seahawks defense forced, I thought to myself, okay, it's just a matter of time. When are the Seahawks going to score and open this thing up? It didn't happen, but this game was never in doubt.
Yeah, I didn't feel that way. And even if Philadelphia had taken the lead and had come, I felt very confident and comfortable that Seattle was in a very strong position. And they took a double-digit lead early, and then they kind of played it a little close to the vest when it came to their offense, except when it came to throwing to DK Metcalf, who is emerging as an absolute superstar. And we found out one thing you don't do to DK Metcalf in the pregame. We found out one thing you don't do. We'll talk about that with the Professor John Clayton. But right now, here on Danny Gallant, it's time to tell you what to watch for.
What to watch for every morning at 7:10. Brought to you by Dubin Law Group. The first look at the stories worth watching today with Danny and Gallant.
Well, do you know where your San Francisco 49ers are? They're in Arizona. Their next two home games will be played in Arizona. They're vagabonds. They're men without a country. Santa Clara County has forbidden practice, contact practice, and games. So San Francisco can't basically work there. So they've gone to Arizona. And I don't know how much of it, how much that will hamper San Francisco, but it's certainly not good. Just part of the many changes that are taking place around the league.
I will give them credit because they played, I think, a very tough ball game against the Los Angeles Rams this past weekend. This is going to be difficult on top of to deal with, but all right, find yourself a home base in Arizona and deal with it. This is just the way that things go. I thought the Cardinals had a pretty funny tweet retweeting that the 49ers like the color scheme that the Cardinals have at their stadium. Just a few basic rules about the house. If there's any food you like, we suggest you put your name on it or it will be thrown out by us. And don't ever, ever, ever touch our drum set. For those who like Step Brothers, I thought that was very funny.
What to watch for?
Our beloved Gonzaga Bulldogs are unstoppable. Number one in the nation, murking Kansas 102-90, destroying Auburn 90-67. And I know that their game tomorrow against Tennessee has been canceled. Is it because Tennessee's scared? I can't say. Probably not. They will play Baylor this weekend. And Danny, Baylor, goodness, they looked really good against the Dogs this week.
I would know because I didn't watch that game because it was on some pay-per-view thing called Flow Coops.
What?
And yeah, they didn't. Here's the thing. I get the Pac-12 network. I choose my cable provider on getting the Pac-12 network and paying the extra money for that. I'm not going to pay more beyond that for pay-per-view sports. Like if the Pac-12, if you have a conference network that's not televising when one of your teams plays in a surprise game against a game that suddenly becomes available against a top-ranked team, you're doing it wrong. But Gonzaga's really good, man. Mm-hmm. Like Gonzaga's really good.
Mm-hmm.
They're tall. They've got some scorers. The French kid that they've got at Ayayi. Oh, 6'5". Kispert, product of King's High School. It's a good Zags team, man.
Unfinished business from last year. They canceled the NCAA tournament because they scurred.
What to watch for?
Also COVID.
We will be watching this morning Carlos Dunlap, scheduled to undergo tests on his foot. He left that game with an issue with his foot, and we don't know a lot more than that. We'll talk to Pete Carroll about that injury as well, but it's something to watch for because we don't know how big a deal that will be. I get nervous about athletes and their feet. Football players and their feet tends to be ominous. We saw Chris Carson miss, 4 games earlier this season with a sprained foot?
Greg Olsen's out for the year with a foot injury, one that's been nagging him for a while. Michael Bumpus has talked with us about the foot injury that he suffered and how he felt after that. And since Carlos Dunlap's come to the Seahawks, they have 19 sacks in 4 games. 19. That is an incredible number, especially considering, first off, where the Seahawks were last year with their pass rush and where they were earlier this year as well. Thank you very much to the Philadelphia Eagles' 10th offensive line combination in 11 outings to assist that number. But yeah, without Dunlap, I do wonder what happens to this pass rush. He has been fantastic.
The other thing we're going to look at is we got a little bit of Wednesday night football in the NFL's quest to play a game on each and every night of the weekday. Where they're playing, and it's going to be an afternoon contest, right? It's 5:30 Eastern, 2:30 Pacific. Ravens Steelers. It was initially scheduled for Thanksgiving night. Now it's going to be played on the following Wednesday. There's a trickle down effect where they're delaying both the Ravens and Steelers games the following week. It continues to just be a mess, largely because you have a continuing COVID outbreak that they're hoping has subsided. It's gone on so long that I believe a couple of the players who would have been ineligible to play, Mark Ingram and J.K. Dobbins, if they had played it on schedule, they wouldn't have been able to play because those are the first two guys to test positive. They now should be eligible because it's been they've gone through the mandatory 10-day window. So if they test negative, they should be cleared to play.
Do the Broncos have a case to continue to cry foul over this? Because they have pushed this game back almost a week now.
It's different reasons, though. Yes, the Broncos have a reason to cry foul. The NFL made an example.
A lot of play.
Right. The NFL made an example of them by saying you lose all your quarterbacks because they didn't follow mask rules. But this is an issue of contagion. Right. The reason the Ravens-Steelers game is being delayed is not because of the number of players that have tested. It's because they continue to test positive and they feel there's an outbreak that's going on with the Ravens. That is what to watch for. It's time to get to the professor. John Clayton joins us for our morning drive.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
It's a four-way battle, and there's only going to be three spots. Somebody has to go.
The first and final word on everything NFL from the professor, John Clayton.
Presented by DivorceLawyersForMen.com.
They scored 30 points a game. They're the best running team in football.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
Professor, two Seahawks stars shone brightly last night. DK Metcalf, Jamal Adams. Pick between the two. Who was better?
I'd say DK Metcalf because, I know we saw the comments before the game that Jim Schwartz went over to him and says that, hey, I coached Megatron and, Calvin Johnson. And it's like, you're not there yet. And DK put that on his shoulder and then came back and, had 174 yards receiving. It was just absolutely phenomenal. Could have had over 200 yards. But the big thing that he was able to do was go out there against Darius Slay in man coverage, get the 174 yards, get a couple penalties on Darius Slay. And remember, Slay's one of the best cornerbacks in the league, destroyed him. Jamal was pretty close because, he's out there getting the sacks, the pressures, all the big hits, all those different things. I mean, it's a great combination with these two.
He hurt Darius Slay right in his pride and is an exhibit of that. Here was one of the questions that Slay was asked after the game, after giving up 175 yards receiving to Metcalf.
Hey, Slay, was there any discussions on the sideline by you or anybody that you know of to possibly get you some more help as Metcalf kept having that big game?
Hell no, I don't need no help. What kind of question is that? Next one.
He kind of did need some help last night, John.
I disagree.
He kind of needed some help last night.
He really did. I mean, and it's interesting because it's been kind of back and forth with some of the games in the last month or so where you have Patrick Peterson going out and containing DK Metcalf. I mean, you certainly saw Jalen Ramsey been able to contain him, but there was no containing last night. I mean, DK Metcalf, right from the very beginning. I mean, going a little slow in the first couple of possessions, but, I mean, just absolutely and totally destroyed him. And it just shows you how good he is and what a great choice. And, of course, the extra motivation is that the Eagles made the mistake of not drafting him. They took J.J. Okega-Whiteside, and he's had 14 career catches. I think he's had two this year. And a guy that I know he's on the COVID list right now, but hasn't made a factor at all. And even I think he's been a healthy scratch sometimes because he's just not a factor. And here's DK Metcalf playing at a Hall of Fame type level.
The Seahawks defense, as far as getting sacks, they are playing over the last 4 weeks at a Hall of Fame level. John, they had 19 sacks over the last 4 weeks, six more last night, helped out by the Philadelphia Eagles 10th offensive line combination in 11 weeks. I mean, over the course of 16 games, that would be on pace for 76 sacks, which is absolutely insane. Are they going to be able to keep this up?
Over the next couple of weeks, I don't see why not. I mean, because, they're taking on bad teams. I mean, the Giants don't have a great offensive line. The Jets don't have a great offensive line. Certainly, Washington's maybe the best of the offensive line they face in the next three games. And so I would imagine they should be able to keep it up. Now, again, the Eagles certainly had the worst offensive line of the four teams that they're playing in this stretch. But that was the idea, that you get into this stretch, you're taking on bad teams that have big problems, and you can take advantage of it and start getting your defense back together. Now, we'll find out today, maybe a little bit more, if Daryl Taylor is going to be able to go. Certainly would be a big loss if Carlos Dunlap is going to miss some time, because I think he's been the big catalyst for this push. But you saw Benson Mayoa have a good game last night. You saw the interior defensive tackles get a lot of pressure. I mean, it's really starting to come on. But this is also, now these next three games, you're taking on teams that you can get sacks and you can get big plays.
We saw what their ideal nickel pass rush is. I thought that was one of the things last night. And in their third down pass rush, it is Benson Mayoa and Carlos Dunlap as your ends. And then Rasheem Green and Jaron Reed as the defensive tackles, Rasheem Green looked really good in that role. I would say of all that, we haven't talked that much about him, but Rasheem Green has been very effective since he's returned from injury.
Yeah, he really has. And, you know, he's been getting slowly better each year. I mean, it was a struggle in that first year because, you know, he missed time in training camp and he was really slow with that knee injury. Came on better last year and I guess you could say technically led the team in sacks with four. And now I think now that he's healthy and coming back, that's a great combination. And now they have a little bit of a rotation. But the big thing is they're getting some confidence and they're having success.
What do you think was the biggest reason for the Seahawks' sluggish offense, especially in the first half last night?
The Eagles' defense, and I think certainly some of the offensive line issues right now. I mean, again, it's been a great year for the offensive line, but I think you can see that they do miss Brandon Shell because, you know, he's looked so good at right tackle. And, you know, Cedric Oboye didn't do bad, but, you know, going against that defensive line, because, again, that defensive line of the Eagles is really good. And, you know, particularly with Fletcher Cox in the middle and Brandon Graham and all those, you know, Derek Barnett had a good game. So I think that was the biggest issue. But also I think, and again, another warning, it's like yeah, everybody that wants to go for those fourth and one and fourth and goals and things like that, sometimes it's better just to take the points, because you know this was a game where if they would have scored that touchdown in that early drive, you know, that would have made the game so much easier. Or even if they would have got the two field goals, that would have made the game a little bit easier too, because you know, you knew it was going to be a limitation to the number of the points that the Eagles were going to score.
John, I was a big fan of them going for it even though they didn't get it.
I'm not. I think, you know, there's different times you have to judge it, particularly, okay, if you're taking on a bad defense, do it. But you're taking on an Eagles defense, and say what you want, it's a top 10 type of defense.
Yeah, I was, if I'm going to nitpick, I didn't like the fact that of those four goal-to-go plays in the first quarter, that three of them were rushes, that I would have liked to see Russell get a few more opportunities. But I guess I kind of like the mindset of them being aggressive and going for it, even though, as you pointed out, maybe in this game a little bit of discretion would have been better than the valor.
Well, plus, I mean, a fly sweep or jet sweep on a fourth down play, it's like it's giving up too many yards and giving a defense a chance to get there and make the stop.
Here's the other thing. I love that play. If DK Metcalf makes the right block, that thing is out the gate. That thing, he walks into the end zone.
He did block the guy. He just blocked it incorrectly.
Him.
Right.
He chucked him into the backfield. It wasn't exactly. John, DK Metcalf now has the league lead in receiving yards. He's 18 yards ahead of Tyreek Hill. Travis Kelce's number three. Is this an all-pro season? There are two all-pro receivers.
Mm-hmm.
Is this an all-pro season for DK Metcalf, do you think?
It could be. I mean, but you know, that's the thing. There's, you know, with Tyreek Hill out there, and I guess they're is fortunate in Michael Thomas has been injured and had the season down in New Orleans that he can have. But, I mean, you have so many other receivers right now doing so well. But what's interesting, I saw last week's voting for the Pro Bowl by fans, and I think that Tyler Lockett and I know Tyler. I mean, DK Metcalf was somewhere like number three or four, so you have to figure he's got a great chance for the Pro Bowl, and Tyler Lockett has an outside chance for the Pro Bowl, and they come out as the highest-rated guys by the fans on the two-receiver set. But DK, I think, right now is certainly going to be in the mix because he's having a Julio Jones type of year, or he's having a A.J. Green type of year. He's really been great.
Do we need to get out our red bad stamp and stamp it directly on Carson Wentz's forehead? Because my goodness, that was a tough watch. And John, I'm surprised, considering that Jalen Hurts was getting reps with the first team during the week, that they didn't turn to him in this game. It never felt like the Eagles had a chance offensively with Wentz under center.
Nah, I mean, what did he have, like 2 yards, 4 yards in the first quarter? And, you know, he had all the three and outs and didn't get a first down until the second quarter, late in the second quarter. I mean, he looked awful, and it's getting worse and worse and worse. And just get the feeling that Doug Peterson right now doesn't have a grasp of what to do with Jalen Hurts to put him in for Carson Wentz. I know on Monday last week, he said that if he would replaced Carson Wentz, he would be giving a signal to the players that the season's over. Well, guess what? The season's over, so you might as well start to think about it, because it's not working with Carson Wentz. I mean, bad throws, bad mistakes, bad decisions. I mean, he gets sacked now six times. That gives him 46 sacks. I mean, gets a crucial red zone type of interception. No, I think that they've got to really start to consider it.
All right, Professor, we always appreciate your time. We'll look forward to catching up with you tomorrow. We can hear you this afternoon with Wyman and Bob. Thanks, John.
Okay, thanks.
That is the professor. You can also follow his work on 710sports.com. You don't tug on Superman's cape. You do not spit into the wind. And there is one specific nickname that you ought not mention to DK Metcalf. You'll hear what that is next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
They can't get in his head. It's hard to cover. In my opinion, he's unmatchable. You know, he just can do everything.
Third down and 13. Here comes a blitz this time. Russ looks. Now he's going to let it fly. Got a man out there. Metcalf makes the catch at the 5. He's down at the 1 yard line.
He loves the work ethic. He loves the process. He loves the journey. He's only 22. He's growing. He's getting better and better. And so he just got to stay the course.
Russell throws. Metcalf makes the catch down to the 10. Jumps over a man. Knocked out of bounds at the 5 yard line. Metcalf on a crossing route. Russell Wilson getting out of the pocket.
That's an incredible one-hand catch. He knew he was fighting for space, you know, so he decided to make the space so he could and go with the one-handed catch. He knew exactly what he was doing.
Play fake. Here comes the rush, and Russell's going to throw deep over the top. Got a man out there reaching up, making the catch. Guess who? DK Metcalf over the top of Darius Slay. I'm going to reach up and catch this perfectly thrown ball with one arm.
You know, I still got work to do.
The amazing DJ Wilder putting that together behind the glass on the heels of a 23-17 Seahawks victory last night.
I could never have imagined DK Metcalf on ice skates until we heard that. Now Man. It's just graceful. You imagine him a slow arcing turn, choreographed. Yeah, just pure grace.
You know, I can't imagine him doing figure skating, though, in the way that we would like to see figure skating. The way I would like to see figure skating would involve hip checks and some extreme crushing Monster energy drinks and playing some, like, Slayer in the background. Because I think DK Metcalf's the kind of person that would try to hip check people while figure skating, because that guy wants to hit people. And that is why I love him. I cannot get over how much I love the fact that this guy wants to block and hurt people while blocking. To the point, Danny, that last night they had to send a defensive line goon after him. Malik Jackson. They sent Malik Jackson after DK after that play where he went at where Darius Slay felt the need to defend himself.
Two different guys shoved DK in the back. Like that, and blatantly just shoved him in the back, one of whom actually outweighed DK. My favorite play is the deep pass, because there's nothing like watching a guy that big run by a defensive back. But the first catch he has on that slant, where then the safety comes in to lower the boom, and it was just like what happened in the game, only this time he caught it, in which the game against San Francisco.
The 49ers.
Right, where it tried to light him up, and the other dude ends up flattened, and DK slows down, but doesn't even, not only does he not go down, he doesn't move backward. That's just got to be soul-crushing to have that happen on the first play of the game, and you're like, I hope you packed a lunch because it is going to be an extremely long day for you.
I think his name was McLeod. Rest in peace, random fella McLeod. It was a quick game for you, in and out. Honestly, I think he did play the rest of the game. He actually did have a couple of plays later. Look, it wasn't a perfect performance for DK Metcalf. He did have a drop in the end zone. That's the one thing that we all know that he has to work on. The hands, from time to time, they're not the place that you would like to see them. I saw Bump, and we'll talk with Bump at 9 o'clock, tweet after the game. It's the one thing he still has to work on. But he does feel it's something that he can complete in this game. And there was that one play in the end zone where he was in traffic. It would have been a very difficult catch, but the ball did hit him right in the chest.
It was a weird play though, right?
Yeah,
because Slay had already fallen down. It was in traffic. Yeah, this wasn't. We've seen him have some drops.
Yeah,
this one didn't go off the face mask. But think about how crazy that is. That he almost had another touchdown, and probably he's not that far away from having a 200-yard receiving game.
No, not at all. And really, the Eagles had no answer for him all night. And that is, as the professor told us, that's a respectable defense at the very least. It's led by Jim Schwartz, their defensive coordinator. Jim Schwartz, you might remember as the former head coach of the Detroit Lions, the guy who has gotten into scuffles with one
What's
Jim
the
Harbaugh.
Thing you yeah, that's the thing I remember most about him. Like, two facts that I remember about Jim Schwartz. The first is, almost got into a fight with Jim Harbaugh over their post-game handshake because he thought Harbaugh slapped him on the back too hard. And then the second thing is that he After that, he went to the Bills and was their defensive coordinator, and he had the players carry him off the field after they beat the Lions, which I was like, that's weird. That's weird when you ask your players to carry you off the field. Like, that's definitely weird.
My favorite Jim Schwartz memory is when he was defensive coordinator of the Lions in 2012 in Thanksgiving against the Texans. Justin Forsett ran for an 80-yard touchdown where he was clearly down. Since it was a touchdown, the referees have to review it by rule. But Jim Schwartz lost his mind, threw the challenge flag on the field, and at that point, if you threw the challenge flag on the field, they could no longer replay and review the call. So the touchdown stood, and the Lions were penalized 15 yards. Watching Gunther Cunningham, then the defensive coordinator of the Lions, on the sideline, stare in anger at Jim Schwartz, who said, yeah, my bad, as he was cooling down from that little temper tantrum, was one of my most fond memories of Jim Schwartz. Let's add another memory to the book of Jim Schwartz. Per DK Metcalf, Jim Schwartz went up to him before the game and, unfortunately for Jim Schwartz, motivated DK Metcalf.
You know, I still got work to do. One of the defensive coaches came up to me and it kind of made me mad that he was like, you know, I was in Detroit with Megatron, but you're not there yet. You know, in my mind, I'm not trying to be Megatron. I'm trying to be me. So, you know, had a little chip on my shoulder the whole game.
Was that Jim Schwartz?
Yes, sir.
And not just that, he also had talked about in this game how he was upset that the Eagles passed on him in the draft, that they took J.J. Arcega-Whiteside.
Now, the funniest thing I saw is that somebody in the Philadelphia media corps, and I'm too bad I can't remember his name right now, when that ball was dropped in the end zone, somebody tweeted out, Arcega-Whiteside would have had that. Which that's like that's some high level humor. Schwartz wasn't trying to egg him on, was he?
I don't think so. Honestly, I think that he was likely fairly complimentary, because I don't think you just go up to a guy and say, you're not Calvin Johnson yet. I bet he said, man, you're on your way to being Calvin Johnson. And I think that DK is insane in that he can spin a compliment into motivation. We have seen this before with Richard Sherman here. I think it's great that we're seeing it with another guy. And especially after we all got to witness the Last Dance this summer, DK retweeted, I think, a Philadelphia reporter who had the Schwartz quote with that meme of Michael Jordan where it says, and I took that personally.
That's really funny. Because I can't tell whether I want the story to be, and who knows what the truth is, whether I want it to be that Schwartz wanted to see if he could kind of mess with him. Because I've heard about coaches doing that before. Coaches coming up and saying something and trying to kind of get into another player's head and say, how will you deal with this? Will you respond to me putting a little bit of pressure or taking a poke at you? And it's certainly outside. Like, that sort of gamesmanship, usually the opposing coach does not like. Don't be talking to my players. A little bit different rules. Or if it's just completely like DK, in the same way that Michael Jordan decided that he was going to, that he had been snubbed by George Karl at a restaurant, in which you're like, there's nothing George Karl could have done for MJ not to twist that into some sign of disrespect from a fellow UNC guy. And I'm going to bend this around and skewer him on it.
Poor George Karl on that front. DK was fantastic last night, Danny. And you asked the question before the show, is he the second best player on the Seattle Seahawks? I think he has to be. I mean, with what he has done this year, the strides he has taken from year one to year two, the fact that he's only 22 years old, and I think he can only get better, he is just unbelievable, really. I have never this quickly had a player turn into my favorite, and everything about DK, I cannot get enough of. If I were still one to buy jerseys, I think I would have an action green, a midnight blue, and perhaps a throwback variant for him.
It's pretty remarkable how quickly he has emerged. And a guy that I thought would be growing as a rookie, who became a significant factor, to someone who, look, there's going to be an argument for him being one of the two best wide receivers, an all-pro receiver here in his second season. It's really remarkable. And Bobby Wagner, Jamal Adams, DK Metcalf, and Russell Wilson are the four best players on this team. And I would have said that at the start of the season, you hoped that DK would be in the top five. Now I'm wondering if he's number two.
That is Danny O'Neill. I'm Paul Gallant. It's Danny and Gallant. The Seahawks, 8-3, sole possession of first place in the NFC West and a real shot at the one seed in the NFC after last night's 23-17 victory over the Philadelphia Eagles. We're talking about it all morning. We are not allowing complaining, which has been very hard for your boy. But he has done a good job thus far. Up next, the Seahawks defense has 19 sacks over the last 4 weeks. Isn't that incredible? They were able to get 6 sacks of the Philadelphia Eagles last night, and they strung together 2 good performances in a row. Is this a step forward for Seattle's defense, or was Philadelphia really just that bad? We'll discuss that next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Really, a lot of guys contributed to that, which is great. Carlos had a couple really good rushes, of course.
Wentz steps up, gets in trouble, goes down again. Dunlap this time gets to him. Jaron Reed also there. A coverage sack because Seahawks had all those guys tied up and Wentz just had nowhere to go. He's sacked for the second time tonight.
Jamal had one, I guess, tonight. Might have, he's involved too.
Play fake inside. Wentz is beat. Chased and he goes down. Jamal Adams gets there all the way back to the 25-yard line. Another sack. That's the fourth one of the night. And this one goes to Jamal Adams as he comes off the corner and Wentz didn't have a chance.
Bobby had a couple great rushes when we didn't maybe get the sack, but still a good pressure.
Here comes the blitz. Wentz steps up, goes down. L.J. Collier jumps on his back.
Everybody's hitting it, you know, and so it's Kenny's doing a really nice job of mixing the calls and utilizing the personnel and keeping them off balance, and it's great that everybody's benefiting.
Straight out of Seattle, a reinvigorated pass rush. That's an Eagles offensive line that was starting 2 new offensive tackles and their 10th configuration this season. At the same time, man, that's exactly what your pass rush is supposed to do against a reconfigured offensive line, and especially early. That the Eagles couldn't do anything their first 5 drives. Why? Because Seattle was able to get pressure whenever it wanted.
Right, and it did not help out that Carson Wentz was inaccurate on his first couple of passes. They were never able to get into a groove, and I imagine that as the game wore on, the offensive line may have gotten a little discouraged with the lack of offensive production. I know that that happens, especially for a team that's been struggling as much as the Eagles have been this year. And they eventually were overwhelmed. One of the big problems for Wentz this season has been that he's been holding on to the football too long. I didn't feel like he had a lot of time last night. And you saw it on a couple of plays. The Eagles' best offense at times was Carson Wentz scrambling up the middle.
Running the ball.
Right.
Those receivers are awful. Mm. Like that, and either that or Seattle's. Maybe I should flip it around. On No Complaint Tuesday, maybe it's a sign that Seattle's coverage with Shaquille Griffin back out there, they were just on him like glue. They were just stuck to him because you showed it a couple times, like where they looked at it. Who's he supposed to throw the ball to? Who's open here? Because I didn't see a lot of guys that gave him a lot of opportunities.
What's the thing that we really wanted to see out of the Seahawks cornerbacks? No separation. Shaquille Griffin, he was really good in this game because he provided little. And there were a couple of plays. There was one play where he got away with the pass interference, and there was another play where he got called for it. I'm cool with that. Stay close to these wide receivers. Get more and more confident, feeling that you can play up against them and stick with them. I think he had a really good performance considering he missed the last month.
Yeah, I liked what I saw from the defense. To me, what I wanted to see was, is that pass rush able to look how it's been the last few weeks? Is it able to build on that? And they should look good. This should be a game where they're able to win matchups, and they were. They were. Jaron Reed, L.J. Collier, Rasheem Green. I thought all of their down linemen had really good games, and they should have against a team that was having a juggled, battered offensive line that was missing its best player in Lane Johnson.
Yeah, and 4 weeks in a row versus going up against a beleaguered Eagles offensive line, what do you look at as the reason for the Seahawks' recent pass rush success?
I think the impact and the arrival of Dunlap has allowed guys to be in their right roles. I think Benson Mayo is a good rotational pass rusher.
Got a sack.
Who, when he's rushing on third down, when he's rushing in passing situations as an end, that's the situation you want. I think it's a problem when he's playing on early downs. I don't think he's a net plus for you there. And we saw last night, I think the addition of Dunlap allows Mayoa to move to his right spot in the pass rushing rotation. You've got Rasheem Green back. He's playing defensive tackle in that nickel pass rush. And I think you now have a clear, I think they have a good early down defense, and I think they have a good pass rushing group. And we haven't seen that delineation of groups like this before. Puna Ford is a great first and second down defensive tackle. And even he's been disruptive. I don't know if he got credited with the sack with Dunlap last night, but he forced him. It feels like everybody's in the right spot now, Paul.
Pete's patience paid off, and he told us about this early in the year. It's coming, and we were a little skeptical. And to be honest, it was fair to be skeptical. Until they brought in Carlos Dunlap, we did not see this kind of a difference. But now, with a Dunlap in the mix, it makes you feel a lot comfortable using a rotation, waves, if you will, of pass rushers in the same way that you were earlier in the past decade, where you were really, really good on defense, where you had a Chris Clemons and a Michael Bennett, among other guys that you could send and take off the field and let them rest for a couple of plays.
Now, this is going to be an enduring sort of theme over these next few weeks, because there's going to be an asterisk that's posted by everything the defense does.
Yeah, you're playing bums. I mean, that Eagles offense was wretched. They were awful. Their best play was, as a bunch of texters have pointed out, because they're mad about it on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line, was that missed intentional grounding call, where the referee, who was legitimately standing at the line of scrimmage, somehow did not see that pass did not make it past the line of scrimmage, which, by the way, is intentional grounding, to the point where even John Perry, resident NFL shill for all things referee, I think he even said that's a bad call.
We've got a no-complaint rule. Does that apply to the broadcast crew?
No, they were dreadful, Danny. And honestly, at some point, I want to pull up Brian Greasy. I don't want to hear Brian Greasy talk. You got replaced by Jake Plummer. Can you stop being a shill for Carson
Plummer's
Wentz?
Plummer's pretty good.
Yeah, Brian Greasy was not. And Brian Greasy, why are you sticking up for Carson Wentz? I mean, did you invest in his stock? What was that about? Look, at the end of the broadcast, this was my first, I'm in Seattle, why are they not talking about the Seahawks moment? Because 5 minutes spent explaining away why Carson Wentz was not benched, and then let's talk about the NFC East standings. No one cares! No one cares! Oh, everyone's watching the game. Do you think the people that are still watching on the Eagles broadcast are like, yeah, well, the NFC East, man, it's such a close race. And they were talking about the Seahawks' upcoming schedule, and they got back into talking about the NFC East. That is a dumpster fire division. Danny, honestly, more than anything, I think that the broadcast is the root of me being annoyed with this win, more so than some of the offensive struggles, because I don't think I ever want to watch another Monday Night Football broadcast. In fact, bring back Joe Tessitore, because at least he would give Jason Myers credit for making all those field goals in a row.
He did. He's made 26 in a row. Do you know it's the second longest streak in franchise history?
Woo-hoo.
That's right. I went and looked that up last night. In my search for positive sides, that's right. Jason Myers has made 26 in a row. The franchise record is Olindo Mare. He's got 30 in a row. I got so sick of hearing the analysis of, A, why Carson Wentz is bad, B, why Philadelphia fans believe Carson Wentz is bad, C, why Carson Wentz isn't so bad that you would need to swap him out for Jalen Hurts, who, by the way, played two plays, two snaps. What the hell was that? It was like, hey, we're gonna bring this guy in at the start of the second quarter just so in case you've got a shred of confidence left, Carson, we snap that in two right quick just to make sure that you don't get any. And then we're not going to get any of the benefit of maybe changing quarterbacks in the boost in the arm because we're not going to play him again. I have no idea what happened there, but the Seahawks win. The Seahawks are 8-3. They have their next two games at home against the stepbrothers that are the Giants, then the Jets. And we've got Brock Heward, who will join us next to poke through everything we learned about this Seahawks team, starting with that 6'4" specimen of a wide receiver. That's next.